All right, just a bit of extra detail on this Usyk Fury situation. So obviously a couple days ago, Fury came out with that video offering Usyk 30% take it or leave it. And he said that he would deduct 1% from that 30% for every day that Usyk delays in, I guess, agreeing to the deal or signing a contract. Usyk speedily responded by saying that he accepts Fury's offer of 30%, but it is contingent on Fury donating £1 million of his purse to Usyk's country. And he said that he would deduct 1% from Fury's purse for every day that he delays. So that just seems, I guess, to most people like rhetoric, you know, Fury coming out with some trash talk, Usyk responding with the same kind of thing, just banter between the two. And that's probably what it is. But Gilberto Mendoza, the president of the WBA, obviously he had this deadline in place for Usyk to agree to fight Daniel Dubois, which was 5 p.m. on Friday. And this video from Usyk and the contact that the two teams made with the WBA came before that deadline. So it staved off this situation where Usyk was going to have to agree to fight Dubois or get stripped. Now, according to Mendoza, the two sides have asked for time to work on contracts for this fight. The fight, the proposed date is, what, 6 weeks away? So they've asked time to work on contracts. Now, look, I'm no lawyer. I'm no legal expert whatsoever. My understanding of legal matters is limited, but my layman's level understanding of legal matters is that verbal agreements can be legally binding in some situations. Now, when Usyk said, for every day you delay, you'll pay 1% more from your purse to his country, to Usyk's country, he put a question mark on the end of it, or at least the way it's been quoted here on the Boxing Scene article. He put a question mark on the end of it as if to say to Fury, do you agree? So that isn't him saying, I accept with no strings attached. That's saying, I accept if you agree to give this £1 million of your purse to my people, and you agree that I'll deduct 1% from your purse every day until you agree on this deal, you know? So you could look at that and say, is Usyk actually accepting the 30% there or not? Because with the £1 million out of Fury's purse, well, that's obviously going to bring Fury's percentage down a bit. And then is he serious about deducting the 1%? Or again, is it just him responding in kind to what Fury said? Maybe they're both messing around, right? But as I say, until the contract is signed, we can't really take any of this stuff at face value, to be honest with you. We have to get the official announcement. Maybe we'll get that tomorrow. Hopefully we get it this week. And it needs to be soon, right? Because very short time until the fight takes place, if it takes place at all. All of this stuff has to be ratified legally. Those of you who, maybe you studied law, maybe you know something about contracts, you guys tell me what you think about the points I've raised in this video regarding verbal agreements, excuse me, can be legally binding. So you have to watch what you say. And again, put in a question mark at the end saying, okay, yeah, I agree to your 30% if you do this and you donate for every day that you delay 1% of your purse more to the people of my country, you know? Can that actually be enforced legally? Again, they've only got a tentative agreement in place. Nobody has actually signed anything. So are they actually going to put any of this stuff in a contract? I don't know. There's a lot of people out there, because of dealings with big companies and corporations, they teach themselves law. They actually understand something about it through experience without necessarily having any formal training. So, you know, I'll hear from you guys as well. You look at someone like Frank Warren. He's not a lawyer. Bob Arum's a lawyer. Frank Warren's not a lawyer. But Frank Warren, through his experience of doing business and dealing with lawyers and contracts, he knows something about law, right? He knows quite a lot about law, far more about the world of legal. I know there's a difference between what's lawful and legal. Let me not go into that. But Frank Warren knows something about legal matters and contracts far more so than the average layman, right? And so one more thing I should say actually is we've all been hailing Usyk as this proper fighting man. I know there was the presenter on TalkSport who was, you know, lambasting Fury for the 30% offer, calling it ridiculous. And it is ridiculous. It was Adam Cattrall. And he was saying that, yeah, Usyk's a proper fighting man, taking the 30%, so on and so forth. Yeah, Usyk, I've got absolutely no doubt at all, is desperate for this fight. He clearly wants this fight. I'm saying he wants it far more than Fury does. And that's what's caused the delay in the negotiations, is Fury has been moving the goalposts all over the place, messing around, obviously trying to squeeze more money out of it, yada, yada, yada. it's a bit of a difficult process for Team Usyk having to deal with Tyson Fury, because he just does, he's more willing to walk away from this fight than Usyk is. In order for Fury to even consider fighting Usyk, he wants an absolute perfect situation financially, contractually, and so on. So yeah, Usyk has definitely been the one making all the concessions. But with that being said, we don't know for certain yet that it is actually 30% that Usyk has taken, if we're going to be technical about it. So yeah, we still give him loads of credit. Let's say he takes 35 or 40% instead of taking 30. You still give him credit, right? And also, if the fight doesn't happen, I can't see any way, and this is one thing that Adam Cattrall also said, I can't see any way, logically speaking, objectively speaking, if you examine all the evidence that we're privy to, that the blame, if this fight doesn't happen, should not be placed at the feet of Tyson Fury. One man's been making all the concessions, Usyk. The other guy's been making none. So if it doesn't happen, got to put it on Fury. It's just that simple. So hopefully it does happen. It certainly looks promising at this stage. And I'm hoping for an announcement, an official announcement, signed, sealed, delivered, press conference schedule, all that kind of stuff, official poster, advertisements, everything. I'm hoping for that this week. So let's see what happens. This story is about a week old, but I just want to give my little take on it. It's pictures of Anthony Joshua that emerged from his training camp over there in the US, in Texas, with Derek James, and he's chopping trees, you know, like Rocky Balboa style. Now, this is probably just a photo op. Maybe he wasn't even chopping trees for more than a few seconds. Who knows, right? Got no idea. However, if this is actually part of his training routine, that he's going to be chopping trees and all this kind of stuff, obviously it's a heavy impact, so there's always the potential that you could injure something if you do too much of this. But at the same time, I remember Ernie Shavers, an interview with him. He's a heavyweight from the 1970s and 80s, who was known to be a tremendous puncher. Fought Larry Holmes, Muhammad Ali, so on and so forth, Ken Norton. And he was asked about the secret to his punching power, and he said he chops a lot of trees. I don't know whether that was the inspiration for putting it in the Rocky films, because when did the first Rocky film came out? It was in the 70s, right? So it must have been before Shavers did the interview. But then again, maybe Sylvester Stallone and the other people that worked on Rocky, maybe they were speaking to people in the box. I have to imagine they were speaking to people in the boxing community. Maybe they'd heard that Shavers was doing this, you know, the tree chopping, excuse me, and all this kind of thing. So yeah, that's what Shavers said with regards to him developing this punching power. Now look, punching power is a thing which can be developed, but due to a number of factors, a lot of it is biomechanics, but there are other factors as well. Some people are always going to be able to punch harder than others, okay? But if you're someone that has an aptitude for punching, you can certainly improve it. You can certainly increase your power. Anyone can increase their power, all right? But if you've already got a certain amount, you can take it to the next level. Now, Anthony Joshua has always been a good puncher, but I've always felt as though he could improve his punching power even more if he sat down in his shots a bit more. Now, sometimes you will see him sitting down in his shots. I mean, famously, when he fought Andy Ruiz and he was going in for the finish after he dropped him in the third, he was sitting down on his shots. But a lot of the time, AJ doesn't really sit down on his shots. He's kind of throwing, not necessarily arm punches, but he could bend his knees more and get more rotation. Okay, that's what I'm saying here. Now, when you are chopping trees, you're obviously working certain muscle groups. You're obviously moving your body in a certain way. It's strength and endurance at the same time. It's going to be interesting to see if this has any noticeable effect on Anthony Joshua, because sometimes you can do a certain type of training which you've never done before, and the results can be tremendous very quickly. I remember the first time that I used one of these wall targets. So in boxing gyms, you've got various different types of punch bags, right? Big, heavy bags. You've got speed bags. You've got focus. They call focus balls. I forget what the actually call them, the technical name. But one thing which isn't in a lot of boxing gyms, some boxing gyms have them, but you don't see them in all of them, is they have these wall targets, okay? And these are usually made out of leather. These targets that are fixed to a bracket on the wall, and they come out maybe, I don't know, a foot and a half, okay? And they're, like I say, made out of leather. They're padded. They're usually quite stiff. And this obviously doesn't have anywhere near as much give to it as a normal heavy bag, which is swinging around in a chain. Okay. And so when I started using that way back in the days, this must have been early 2000s, it was very tiring, first of all, because there's very little give when you're hitting one of these things. So I'm hitting it and I'm building up my endurance and stamina, hitting it as hard as I can. I would always go for power, hit it as hard as I can and as fast as I can. And when I went from doing that for a few weeks on that bag back to hitting a normal bag, my punching power, and I was already a good puncher, but my punching power went to the next level because there's no give on this thing I was hitting. So when I was hitting the heavy bags on the chain, I mean, they were flying all over the place all of a sudden, right? So, and I recommended that to other people over the years when I was boxing, to use that wall pad, wall bag, whatever you want to call it, wall target. And they came back to me and said, you know what, you're right. Because it was just sitting there in the corner of the gym. People would hardly use it. But when I told them to go use it, yeah, they saw the benefits as well. And they were really noticeable benefits. The same way with, I always used to like to use the maze bag. Okay, there's a type of bag which isn't so popular these days, but since the invention of aqua bags, people tend to prefer them. They're cheaper than maze bags. But I personally still prefer maze bags over aqua bags. I like aqua bags, but I like maze bags more. And when I started using maze bags, my combination punching with the short uppercuts and hooks developed tremendously when using that. And as I say, the benefits of it were apparent very quickly. I didn't have to wait years. I didn't even have to wait months. It was literally within a matter of weeks, I was noticing a big difference in my ability to punch fast up close. So all of that, right, to say, yeah, it could just be a photo opportunity. It could just be, you know, Instagram, whatever. But it will be interesting to see if the tree chopping, is an integral part or a significant part of Anthony Joshua's strength and conditioning training that he's been doing over there in training camp in the US in Texas. So yeah, let's see if he turns into Ernie Shavers. He was already a good puncher, but let's see if it can improve even more and whether Mr. Jermaine Franklin is going to bear the brunt of it. Let me know what you guys think in the comments below. And also, yeah, let me know if there's any training that you've done, any techniques that you've tried that had a similar effect where you saw dramatic improvements in performance in certain areas, maybe unexpectedly so. Yeah, let me know. Yes, I'm seeing the comments where people are saying, you're not talking about the Ryan Garcia Tank Davis fight. You've not done a video about it and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I've just been busy, bro. And obviously you have to prioritize what videos you do when time is limited. And you know, it is what it is. Anyway, Tank Davis, Ryan Garcia, I'm obviously very happy the fight is signed, sealed, delivered. Now, people are talking about the catch weight and the rehydration clause. Obviously, I don't like those. Obviously, I would much prefer a fight where both guys are fully hydrated and fighting at whatever weight they like. Now, if you're going to have a catch weight, again, you don't want the rehydration clause. The guy's got to calm down in weight anyway to make weight, so allow him to hydrate fully. But as I understand it, the way most rehydration clauses work, at least, is you can't hydrate above a certain amount on the morning of the fight or by the morning of the fight. But for the rest of the day, you can hydrate as high as you want, right? After you have that check weight in on the morning of the fight. So potentially Ryan Garcia could still be whatever, right? Far above the rehydration clause limit when he gets in the ring. Now, people are really having a go at Tank Davis over this, and I get that. But Tank Davis responded by saying that he wanted the fight at 135, and Ryan Garcia refused. Obviously, Ryan Garcia just moved up from 135 to 140 a couple fights back. Or was it a fight back? I forget now. But yeah, he said he wanted it at 135. Ryan Garcia wouldn't do it. He said Ryan Garcia's people proposed to him that they do it at a catch weight. And, you know, I guess Tank Davis said, okay, we can do it at that catch weight, but I also want the rehydration clause. And, you know, the catch weight is only 1 pound above the lightweight limit. So it shows you that Tank Davis sees this as a dangerous fight. It's a measure of how dangerous an opponent he sees Ryan Garcia as. It's not an ideal situation, but my take on it is I would rather the fight happens with these conditions than doesn't happen at all. Maybe some of you guys disagree. Maybe some of you guys feel different, and that's okay. I guess we have to wait and see how the fight goes, because Ryan Garcia feels like he's going to be strong enough. He's going to be fast. And here's the thing, right? Ryan Garcia's got a big following. He isn't desperate. He's not a beggar. So if he is willing to do this, and he's a young guy, right? When you're young, your body's a bit more robust to things like this. If he's willing to do this, then he must feel as though he's going to be comfortable. He must feel as though he's still going to be strong enough. Do you know what I mean? He must know his body well enough. I'm assuming anyway. If you've got a guy who's desperate, a guy who's looking for a payday, a guy who's maybe in the twilight of his career, looking for an opportunity, then yeah, maybe they're going to do things which they're not completely comfortable with, which they're not really confident about, just for the opportunity to get the payday. But with Ryan Garcia, would he really do that? Guy in his prime like that, you know, who doesn't, he's not wanting for anything really. He's got a big following. So I'm going to assume that Ryan Garcia at least believes that he can be, you know, still in a good place when he gets in the ring, strong, fast, you know, have enough energy to deal with Tank Davis. So that's my take on it. It's not ideal. Tank Davis, of course, won't get the credit, nor should he, the full credit for beating Ryan Garcia, if he does win, that he would get if he beat a fully hydrated Ryan Garcia. Of course not. If you're going to beat someone, don't impose any of these restrictions on them if you want the full credit. That's the trade-off that Gervonta Davis has to accept. Hope I did just say Ryan Garcia a second ago. That's the trade-off that Gervonta Davis has to accept, because Ryan Garcia is making a trade-off here. And obviously, from Gervonta Davis' perspective, he's fighting a much bigger guy, yeah? But be that as it may, there have been fighters in the past who've stepped up and fought bigger guys, and there was no rehydration clause. That's why they get more credit than a guy who does introduce rehydration clauses and catch weights and all this kind of thing, yeah? So that's the trade-off. It is what it is. Let me know what you guys think in the comments.